A few years ago, I had an appointment with a young lady. Must have been late 20s, early 30s, something like that. Anyway, she had extremely religious Protestant parents. And she had grown up Protestant, and I don't remember why, but one of her friends had wanted her to talk to me as a Catholic priest. Anyway, she was very frustrated with religion in general. And the reason she was frustrated was she literally did not get it at all. I still remember this. I remember her saying to me, "Father, I just don't get it. You know, this whole thing about are you saved? Are you saved? Are you saved? For God's sake, for what? Saved from what?" And it doesn't make any sense to me. And of course, that encounter, which I had thought about in abstract, but in that moment it was happening, actually, was an encounter that I've never forgotten. And the reason I've never forgotten it is because most of the time, I can't believe this, this is my 45th year of being a priest. And most of the time, I am aware that to a large percentage, if not a majority of people, they don't get it. They don't get it. Now, why don't they get it? This whole, you know, and I've used that example before many times, and it's one of my favorite examples because it makes somewhat, it's ridiculous, but it makes sense. You know, a lifeguard coming to rescue you doesn't make any sense unless you're drowning. It doesn't make any sense. Well, this young lady was doing well. She had no problems. She had a good job, health, no problems. So this whole notion of are you saved, are you saved, are you saved, was quite confusing to her. Now the reason that I bring this up is because in the gospel today, what you have is Jesus locating his mission in the prophet Isaiah. Now, imagine that you are this young lady. You're healthy. When I look out over all of us, the majority of us have gray hair at this mass. Either that or you're coloring it. But you know, they may be a few young people. But listen, try to listen to how Jesus identifies his mission statement from the prophet Isaiah. And try to listen as if you were that young lady in the mid-20s, okay? And try to figure out, what has this got to do with me? "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring glad tidings to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim a year acceptable to the Lord." Now, if I'm that 20-some year old, that makes no sense to me. First of all, anointed me because he anointed me to bring glad tidings to the poor. I'm not poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to captives. I'm not captive. Recovery of sight to the blind. I'm not blind. To let the oppressed go free. I'm not oppressed. To proclaim a year acceptable to the Lord. What does that mean? I mean, are we dealing with, yay, this is going to be the year? What is it? Acceptable to the Lord. Isn't all years acceptable to God? So I understand. And I think it's important that when, first of all, let me put something aside. It has been my experience in these 45 years of being a priest that this is not 100%, okay? It's not 100%. But the younger you are, the less you get it. Because the older you get, the more your body starts falling apart under you. Okay? I'm 72. And it's interesting, the experience of growing old. You know, it's interesting. Everything hurts. You know, and you don't. I always used to wonder why old people fell. You don't have the balance anymore that you used to. But anyway, you begin to see that your body is decomposing under you. And all of a sudden you start saying, is this it? Is there anybody up there? Anybody up there to help me? Because last I heard, we couldn't trade in this body. It was going down. Now, I think that that happens to us individually, and I think that happens to us also collectively. Now, I thought a lot about what I was going to comment on. And I could go down both roads, an individual applying this individually. But there's a second thing that I have to reflect on today. And I want to reflect on it in conjunction with what's going on today, collectively. This Sunday, throughout the church and throughout actually the culture, we are commemorating the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. I presume you're familiar with it, but if you're not familiar with Roe v. Wade, Roe v. Wade is the Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion on demand. And all the churches, lots of churches anyway, I don't know all, are talking about it. And there was a march on life in Washington, D.C. yesterday. And when you compare what Jesus' mission statement was, and what I'd like to do is just spend a couple of minutes reflecting with you, connecting what's going on in our own country to the mission statement that Jesus is given. Let me just begin. Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He has anointed me to bring glad tidings to the poor. Now, I don't know if any of you have traveled, especially in third world countries, but poverty here is middle class in third world countries. You've not seen poverty until you see it in the third world. I'll never forget one time I took a train ride from the border to Mexico City. And as the train was going through different towns, the people living in the railroad tracks, right next to the railroad tracks, in abandoned boxcars and went through several places where they were close to a garbage dump. And I was looking at people seeking through the garbage dump. That's poverty. But it's not all, see, we're not poor here in terms of money. But we are really becoming more impoverished in poverty of spirit. If you think about it, our country these days has disconnected itself from its Christian roots. Publicly, not individually, we haven't. So, if you're here, you haven't done it. But publicly, the people who don't have any religion have grown tremendously in the United States. And our public morality has totally disconnected. These days, the morality, sexual morality, for example, sexual morality is no longer connected to anything. What is it? You can identify as whatever you want. There's, I tell you that the people that, for example, when we prepare people for marriage here, and I can tell you that 9 out of 10 couples that are getting married are living together before marriage. It's, I mean, it's widespread. The LGBTQ, MRSP, QRW movements are running wild, trying to, anyway, I can go through this whole thing, you know, this, the sexual disconnect. And what's happening is you see us arguing, not only sexually, but racially. I mean, think about it. We no longer see each other as human beings made in the image and likeness of God. Everything now is about what color you are. What's your, are you oppressed? Are you an oppressor? It's all about critical race theory, all kinds of different critical studies. And the only, everything is being reduced to who has power over whom. We really are poor, but our poverty is not monetary. Our poverty is we're starving to death spiritually. You know, there's a philosopher by the name of Thomas Hobbes, lived in the 17th century. And Hobbes said that the original state of human beings, I don't agree with him, but he said that the original state of human beings was everyone out for themselves. He used to call it the war of all against all. And it's interesting because the more you see what's happening within us, with all the divisions of sexuality or race, of, you know, money and oppressor, everything that's going on, you see us all starting to go at each other. And you can't turn on the TV or radio without listening to different sides. And the reason that it's happening, and I'm going to say it in a very weird way for you. The reason that it's happening, it's the wrath of God. Now, before you go ape on me, I generally have come to understand the wrath of God in a very interesting way that a theologian expressed it to me. Because that comes from the book of Revelation, the wrath of God. But that theologian said, compare the God who is pictured as wrathful, destroying the world in the book of the Apocalypse, compared to the God who's hanging on the cross. And on the cross, when God, Jesus, God made human, had every reason to turn to his Father and say, Father, to hell with all of them. To hell with them. Look what they've done to me. At that moment, when the wrath of God was most justified, what's the words that come out of his mouth? Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And so there seems to be a disconnect between the God of the book of Revelation and the God that manifests himself at the crucifixion. But this theologian made me see something that I've never forgotten. And that's why I can call it that we are experiencing the wrath of God. You see, he asked a very simple question. Who is God? And the only answer is, God is love. Now, I'm not talking about being in love. I'm talking about respecting and loving and caring about each other. The decision to unite yourself with God in caring for another person, for the good of another person. That's love. If you remove love from human relationships, what do you have left? Now remember, God is love. You remove love, what do you have left? Wrath. The wrath of God is not God's wrath. It is that when we give up on God, the only thing that's left for each one of us is to turn on each other in the struggle for power. The wrath of God. Look at what we've done with our society. You know, abortion, which is what we're doing today, remembering we kill our kids. Right now it's considered very liberal and very wonderful to be for abortion on demand, no matter when, where, and how. We're blind. You talk about Jesus' next statement. He says, recovery of sight to the blind. We've lost it. I'm not saying individually. Hopefully many of us are not. But as a society, for the greater majority, we've lost. We're poor spiritually. We're blind. We're captives. We're captives of our own selfishness, of our own desire to be who we want to be, to proclaim, to let the oppressed go free. But now we think of the oppressed only in terms of race or in terms of one another. We forget about being oppressed because we've disconnected from God. We're oppressed. We are oppressing each other. And so, my friends, this whole thing about Jesus' mission, I'm very conscious of asking all of us, on this day of Roe versus Wade, I think the whole abortion debate, it's not a debate, the whole abortion reality, is really emblematic of the profound illness that is affecting our culture. It's basically, I am willing to kill a child in order for me to live the way I want to live. And you can apply that to all kinds of different areas. You know, I'm willing to, you know, I want money, I want this, and I'm willing to get into a court. We're willing to do whatever we need to do to get what we want. And if you think about it, what is original sin? Original sin is when human beings disconnected from God. Who is God? Love. When love is removed, what do you have left? Wrath. And so we live in a culture now where our relationships are wrathful, constant, publicly. And there are symptoms of it all over the place. Abortion is one of them. Talk about wrath. pulling babies apart so that we can have sex whenever we want to and not have any responsibilities. Accusing each other of all kinds of stuff. It just goes on and on. So today, I want to leave you with this. You know, I've told you what, now what. I mean, so what, and now what. On this day of Roe versus Wade, I not only want you to pray for the end of abortion, but I want you to pray for us as a Christian community that we really try to live out our discipleship visibly. Because never has it in any way been more of a need for real Christians to live out their lives than it is today. I'm not sure that you're going to survive it. What I mean by that is, it is increasingly unpopular to live out your Christian life. It's increasingly unpopular. And the more you live it out, the more ostracized you probably will get. But we need to. And then the last thing is pray for the United States and pray for the world. I'm very scared. That's why every day I become more religious. I know I'm a priest, but you can go through different stages of being more or less religious as a priest because you're doing all this, you know, what is it? Familiarity breeds contempt. You know, if you're not careful as a priest, you can begin to, not contempt in the sense that you hate it, but contempt in the sense that it becomes everyday stuff because you do it so often. But no, we need it because I'm scared. I'm scared for the future and for our nation. And I think the more I look around, the more I understand that the only remedy is to reconnect with love, to reconnect with God. And that can only be done one person at a time. And for you to live it out, and the more you live it out, the more you'll become saintly contagious. You know, Christianity is caught, not taught. You've got to, the virus, not COVID, but the Christian virus, you have to be contagious. It's got to be, it's positive. And the only way you are contagious is when you live it out. And people see it in you. So, on this Roe versus Wade, keep all of us in prayer. And let's recommit ourselves to being images of Jesus, who's the only way, the only truth, and the only life.